Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited, the Magic podcast for drafters who want to explore a format beyond the surface and stay ahead of the regular format learning curve. My name's Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Great Hall of the Citadel, Sachs. Ethan, we got some LTR flashback coming up this week.
Yes, much like The Hobbit came before Lord of the Rings, though I actually... Is that true, even in the writing of it? Like, I know The Hobbit precedes it chronologically. Anyway, we're getting Lord of the Rings flashback drafts this week on Tuesday. So we're going to be talking about Lord of the Rings, and we're going to be talking about The Hobbit.
Well, two things. I don't think you can let Great Hall of the Citadel dangle like that.
Okay, apologies.
The Legends deck from Lord of the Rings, an homage to the Great Land. We're going to be talking some Great Hall of the Citadel. We're going to be talking some bath song. I'm going to be taking some baths this week. I sent Ethan before we started recording yesterday. He'd been like pushing LTR, and I was like, I don't know. And then finally I was like, all right, I'm going to talk about the bath song. I sent him a bunch of screenshots in Discord from my folder where I save all my 3-0s that he makes fun of. But it was beautiful looking through that folder. It was just like, you know, people on sports podcasts can just name like a baseball player from the 90s and be like, ah, that guy. Like, that was how it was for me. I was like, ah, that deck. Oh, that card. Oh, that sweet Legends deck. It was beautiful walk through memory lane.
So, yes, Great Hall of the Citadel, for those not watching on YouTube where you can just see the card, is a land at common, taps for colorless, and it filters for 2 mana. So one tap this, add 2 mana in any combination of colors, spend only to cast legendary spells. And green white ostensibly was food, I believe, in Lord of the Rings. But what it really was a home for 5-color legends, jamming like 3 copies of Great Hall of the Citadel, get some many partings in your deck to go search up basic lands, and you're just a 5-color legends deck.
Get those Frodo Baggins to get the ring tempting going in green white. Oh, it's beautiful.
Was it good? Sometimes. Was it fun? Always.
Always.
I'm curious to get a temp check for yourself on The Hobbit, because I feel like the community at large has cooled on this set.
I've had a good time playing games of The Hobbit. I've certainly not done the draft density that you and the rest of the community have had, certainly. And it is already getting a little samey for me. Like, I'm probably in the 10 to 15 draft range at this point. Mm. But when I opened Lord of the Rings on Scryfall to just refresh the old noggin, I was like, oh my god, there's so many cards here. it was a full format with full color pairs and archetypes and intricate things going on. And I think that is how I feel about The Hobbit, which is that once Lord of the Rings is out, I'm going to be jamming Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and I think that's largely why we're going to, I don't know, not be sunsetting. I mean, folks can let us know in the comments. Folks can certainly let us know in Discord. We'll love to hear what our listeners want from the next few episodes before Reality Fracture previews start. But I'm not sure if we will be returning to The Hobbit, because I have a similar feeling to you. Is like, I've jammed a bunch, but I think once Lord of the Rings drops on Tuesday, that's where my focus is going to be. And so maybe if that's where everybody else is going, we can just talk Lord of the Rings again next week, because that's what we'll be playing. Maybe we want to do some sort of larger level up style episode. Not sure. Maybe we have some interviews lined up in the hopper with some designers over at WotC. Who knows?
Who knows
what fruit will bear from the coming weeks? But I do want to talk as much Hobbit as I have the stomach for, I guess I should say, just as much Hobbit updates as I feel like we have, because I feel like we laid out a pretty good picture last week.
Yeah, I also, and I feel like there's more to touch on this week for sure. Mm-hmm. And I will say, in The Hobbit's favor, this has been my favorite by far of the 3 small sets that we've had. Like, Hobbit gap, TMT gap, Spider-Man gap, and like maybe 2 gaps between The Hobbit and TMT. And I think some of it is what we alluded to last week. Some of it is that it feels, I also think the gameplay and the common oriented nature of it and the play patterns of the commons, all of that stuff is appealing to me. And the fact that it's almost now that the format has gone by for a week, you know what to expect and can start to play around what you expect from decks. Mm-hmm. That's been interesting. And I think as the meta is shifting and Black's closing off in drafts, like, what does that force you to do? I do think it feels like a normal format to me, just like shrunk, which is fine. Like, I think it's going to be done in 2 weeks here instead of done in 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, like a normal format would be. But I think already we're hitting the meta shift.
It's interesting because I feel like I also haven't been enjoying it. Like I'm enjoying my time, which I feel like I can't tell. It's very hard for me to disentangle. Like, am I enjoying it because I like said I was going to play and I'm also like doing well and I feel like I understand it. Like they're all compounded things and I don't know how to disentangle them. But I have been enjoying this set. And so it's sort of weird to me to see folks not liking it because I don't think it's like that bad. Though I do see some of the issues, like the color imbalance is massive. And so if that bothers you, if the sameness of it bothers you. But the thing that I started to feel this week after jamming a bunch of drafts and also doing a little more than a dozen Arena Directs, which we'll be talking about Arena Directs and Best of One Sealed this week as well, because there are two more directs coming up before Reality Fracture drops. It feels like not quite like Limited to me. And I'm going to try and describe it, why I feel this way. But the repetitiveness of it or the predictability of it. Like I had a game the other day where my opponent was also on black red. So a black red mirror. We had the same turns 2, 3, and 4 plays as each other. Like that feels more constructed to me, right? Where you're like, oh, I'm in the mirror. What little adjustments can I make? And so then, especially because you're playing best of one, like you're starting to sort of like, how do I draft red black so that it's good in the mirror? Or how do I draft him? It's what we talked about last week. Crude Bent Blade is always on my mind when I'm building a deck. So how do I build whatever deck I have? Or how do I sequence my cards against this sort of known information? It feels, I don't know, some mix of limited and constructed. And so I like it, but it doesn't feel like normal limited to me.
Yeah, that checks out to me. I think I like a little imbalance in my Magic formats is what I've decided. I think a lot of my favorites have been historically imbalanced.
I think that I don't know if that's true for me. I know that that is true for you because you do not mind drafting the same deck 10 times in a row.
Well, and I also like trying to start and getting forced off it. I just think It adds interesting wrinkles to the draft.
Yes. Yeah. All right. We're sort of blowing it. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's do a little housekeeping and then we can continue our thoughts on The Hobbit week 2. Let's chat the Patreon. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. We've got some great perks over at the Patreon. The first is access to our Discord. Everybody gets access to the Discord. The Discord had a massive glow up this week. We did a full revamp of the Discord, sort of squashed the channels together, made it a nice, more compact, tight, concise experience. And I got to say, I personally have been loving it. I know you and I really haven't touched base on it since it dropped. But the thing that I really appreciate about how the change has come to bear is that if I want to hop into the Discord and talk to someone about Magic, I know where they are. Because I'm like up to date on all the channels now.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And largely the channels are left are the channels that I lived in anyway. Mm-hmm. And then all of the splintered, and it's funny, like we did the Discord glow up and we consolidated. And I think participation in the Discord went up, which was our hope. And I think mm-hmm. your and I's participation in the Discord went up as well. And immediately we also started getting requests for, well, can we have a channel for this? Well, can mm-hmm. we have a channel for this? And like, we stood our ground. No. Yeah. I think the only thing we added was what? Recent episode discussions,
recent episodes,
right?
Yeah.
Which was a place that people wanted. And I like that channel also because I want to, you know, naturally engage with people about the content we're putting out. I think it is a very positive change and I'm excited about it going forward.
Yeah, so Discord's awesome. And our podcast feed is another perk via the Patreon where you get access to not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please, we encourage you to head on over to the Patreon. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Michael, Dean, Delay, Steven, Oscar, Ben, Cinnamaldehyde, and Kyle. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
You'd love to see a Ben on there. Do you think Cinnamaldehyde is an Ethan in disguise who just was ashamed to declare his or her Ethandom?
No, there are no shame filled Ethans out there. Maybe there's one right here. This message is sponsored by Raycon. With back to school season here, I've been thinking about one thing I really wish I had back when I was in school. Raycon's Everyday Earbuds Classic.
Whether you're heading back to school yourself or shopping for a student, these are such a great back-to-school essential. The active noise cancellation is perfect for tuning out distractions when you're studying at the library, working on assignments, or trying to focus between classes.
They sound amazing, they're comfortable to wear, and I've been loving them lately. They're 20% off right now if you want to check them out.
I love my Raycon Everyday Earbuds. It's my go-to for mowing the lawn, for doing tasks around the house like dishes, being able to have a podcast going in my ear, and I am obsessed with podcasts, consume probably, I don't know, a couple hours of podcasting a day, whether that's my morning routine or, like I said, doing tasks or in the evening before I'm falling asleep. I cannot exist without my Raycon Everyday Earbuds.
They have up to 32 hours of battery life with the case, and the quick charge function means you get 90 minutes of playtime with just 10 minutes of charging.
Plus, the awareness mode means that when you're out running errands, you can still hear what's happening around you while enjoying what you're listening to.
The Everyday Earbuds Classics are the perfect back-to-school companion. Go to buyraycon.com/LOL to get 20% off. Thanks, Raycon, for sponsoring. There's also some big news in the tournament world, which is that I'm locked for Atlanta.
Locked for Atlanta had a free badge available to him via my creator badge and didn't register because, quote, he thought he was less than 0% to go at the time.
Okay, so here's the story. Here's what happened. Yesterday, I got out of the shower and I had a panic because I was like, because I had your email in my inbox still about the badge. And in my head, I was like, I have a free badge. And I got out of the shower and I was like, wait, I don't know if I do. Let me check this email again. And it has the window to redeem the badge has expired 2 months ago.
Yes.
And I was sort of kicking myself and I was like, oh, man, I should have done this. And then I checked it again. And Ben sent the email to me 3 days after my daughter was born. And the deadline to redeem it was like 5 days after that. And I was like, OK, I don't feel bad that I thought 3 days after I had a newborn that I was 0% to go to Atlanta. But Rosie's a champ. We're here. We're going to do it. The flights were cheap. Ben and I have our hotels booked and we're just there. That's the other thing. It's like, we're not doing stuff. I mean, we will be doing stuff, but we're not doing anything official.
It's going to be a party. It's going to be great.
So we got to organize some drafts. I assume we will be doing the limited tournament qualifier.
Aggressively dropping. We will be registering and aggressively dropping from the limited qualifier.
Okay, that's a you thing. That's not a me thing.
It's not a you thing. LR's episode this week was on, they like touched on Hobbit and they did mental toughness. And LSV was like, you know, if you register for these things and you lose in the first round, you're just, you know, lowering your equity over the long haul because you don't know when you're going to pick up those losses. And, you know, if you have that mentality, I don't know why you're even bothering registering. And I was like, I know why I'm bothering registering. It's a great feeling. I either want to start hot or I want to get out of there and do the rest of the convention, baby.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I feel like everybody feels that to be true. Like you would rather start like X and O or O2 drop.
Oh, for sure. But I'm even in the, like, if I don't You're think my deck's O1, good, yeah. I'm in the O1 drop category now. I'm in the O1 drop category or the 1-1 drop category if I don't think my deck's good. No more slogging it out to get like 4-3 or whatever.
And you think you're locked for two other Magic Cons next year?
Well, I don't think. I know. I am locked for Detroit and Vegas for sure. I'm available those dates.
Great.
And I'm going to every Magic Con I can for sure.
I am locked enough mentally for Detroit that I should just like get on the badge stuff of it all. Did I miss that window too?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. So Detroit, I'll do. Vegas is probably tough to swing, but we'll see.
Vegas.
Should we do a draft log? We haven't done a draft log of this format. We should at least do one on the podcast.
Listen, I would be in for doing more than one. You know, I love a good draft log.
Okay. Where are we going to, how are we going to do this? I kind of want to do like most to all of this. We'll maybe speed run some of it. But I think this draft is interesting and gets most interesting or the payoff happens in pack three as a little spoiler. So, pack one, pick one. You sit down, little Hobbit draft action. See the following cards as options. There's a crude bent blade. Is that the top common for you overall?
That's what I was thinking about. I posed the question to you before we started recording and was blowing the podcast. This is why we can't talk to each other before.
We're really not in the middle of the week. Not allowed.
Like, it's just terrible. Blows all the content. I asked if you were picking goblin plate armor. Is it plate mail or plate armor?
Plate mail.
Plate mail. I asked if you were picking... Plate mail seems too big, like, for a 2-1 with menace. That's why I want to call it goblin plate armor. Plate mail, to me, is like something a knight wears that's, like, 4-7 or something.
Nerd alert. Thinking too much about the lore.
Goblin plate mail over crude bent blade. I think I am still, and maybe I'm behind the curve. I want that 2-drop coming down.
Yeah, like, curve is really important, and goblin plate mail is incredible, but, like, the plethora of 2-drops, as long as you are prioritizing 2-drops, I think you can get there, whatever, even with front porch sentries I'm looking at in this pack, which is filler plus, that's the 2-mana 2-2 that when it dies gives something -1/-1, but, like, if that's in your 2-drop slot, and it also plays really nicely in the is it good against crude bent blade conversation. I'm in on crude bent blade because my ideal drafts are like a handful of blades and then other spot removal to support them, and I feel like those are the best decks you can get.
So can I float this by you? So you think is this a true statement for you then that the gap between crude bent blade and the next 3-drop is larger than the gap between goblin plate armor and the next 2-drop?
Goblin plate mail, yes.
Goblin plate mail, yeah. They just can't be... Goblins can't be wearing plate mail. It's not possible.
So there is a crude bent blade in this pack. Moving on to the uncommons, there's a Sylvan Reveler, though you're never taking that. That's the Simic 3-2 that loots, and then you can put a land from your graveyard onto the battlefield. There's Misty Mountains Raider. I love this card. 4 and a red 4/4 whenever you attack a Mass Goblins 2. But the rare is Dane Ironfoot, 2 and a red 1/4. When it enters, you make an axe equipment, and when you do attach it to target creature you control, and whenever Dane attacks, each equipped attacking creature gains double strike until end of turn.
How close is crude bent blade and Dane for you?
I thought about it. I'm going to be honest, but I know Dane is busted, and I should not be leveling myself in that way, I think.
I've played with Dane a couple times. It's good. I almost think I'd take crude bent blade. I would feel much more comfortable starting black than red.
I felt that too. I was worried I was leveling myself. I don't know if it's that. Yeah, I don't know how crazy it is, but I took Dane. So that's where we're going to go. Pack one, pick two. I don't think there are any cards in consideration other than the one I selected, which is down to Goblin Town, the 2 and a black saga. Thoughtseize them, amass one, and then drain one, chapters 3 and 4. There are other cards in the pack. There is a Plunder the Trollshaws. There's a Golem Silent Slinker. There's a Snow Slope Hunter as a red follow-up. That's the 2 and a red 2/3. Sack another creature or artifact. Exile the top card of your library. You can play it until the end of your next turn. Activate only once and on your turn. I've come way down on this card. Old Fat Spider Can't See Me, the Blue Saga we talked about last week. And a rare in the pack is Along the Crooked Way, 2 and a black. Return a creature from your graveyard to your hand, amass one, or whenever a creature leaves your graveyard, amass one, and you could pay 1 and a black to give goblins and orcs menace until end of turn.
Yeah, I think a clear down to Goblin Town as well. Can we chat Old Fat Spider Can't See Me for a second? Because I still like this card quite a bit.
Why should you not?
I just feel like it was in the data dumpster, I keep seeing them wheeling. Like, it's crushed me when I play against it and also crushed my opponents when I play with it.
Old Fat Spider Can't See Me is the how good it is directly proportional to the number of apothecaries and counselors you have.
Sure. But if you're playing blue, you should have lots of those cards. But
I agree, but I don't know if that's where everybody's at. That has to be. And I think people are probably not playing it early enough, is my guess.
Are you on the first plunder over the first Old Fat Spider Can't See Me?
No. Like, there's a weird thing where I'm like, I bet Old Fat Spider will wheel.
Right.
Plunders are, like, nice, but I don't think they're, like, necessary, is my my current take. Because, like, I'm really hoping to not cast them up front. And so how good Plunder is directly proportional to the amount of recruit that I have. And if I have a lot of recruit, my deck is going to be good anyway, is sort of how I feel.
I have been drafting Plunders higher, but I value Old Fat Spider Can't See Me higher. It's like the roto draft thing where you're trying to, like, float the card that you can expect to get or whatever.
Well, and we should say, I feel like I said this last week, but I didn't quite explain it. Old Fat Spider Can't See Me for the blue decks, the chapter 3 and 4 being draw card, the fact that you get your second draw on 2 turns for free, meaning you do not have to spend mana for it those turns, is really big. The fact that you get to grow your cards while developing your board, or maybe then you pass and cast Flashback Plunder on your opponent's turn, or hold up Confusticate and Bebother, like that just gives your deck so much play while also accelerating the counters on your creatures. It's really big.
Okay, down to Goblin Town. So we've got a Dane and a Goblin Town.
All right, pack one, pick three. There's a Stir Up Trouble and Bilbo's Deadly Slice as some black removal spells. There's a Golem the Abandoned, the uncommon one on a black 2/2 Golem that can exile something from a yard, drain two, or they lose two, and you can get it back from your graveyard to your hand. And there's still a red rare in the pack, Balin Loremaster, 3RR, 4/4 with Storied. Whenever it or another dwarf you control enters, you may discard your hand, draw X cards, where X is the number of cards discarded this way. If you have an enduring story, Balin deals X damage to each opponent.
Yeah, I think this is a clear Golem the Abandoned for me.
Yep, I agree. Pack one, pick four, second verse, same as the first. Now, you said last week that you thought the second copy of Golem got worse. Like it plummeted. And I agreed with you until I realized, did you know you can juggle these?
Like if one's on the battlefield, you can sack it to the other one's ability, get it back in its hand, play the other one.
I got my opponent from 10 to 0 juggling golems.
How much mana did you have? Like 8 mana?
A lot. That's the thing about this format is like sometimes like red black is both very fast, but also the red black mirror can be grindy as heck.
Yeah.
And so those games, like whatever card advantage engine you have is massive. Whatever sort of inevitability like that you have is massive. But yeah, so there's a second Golem or another Golem in this pack, pack four, along with another Stir Up Trouble. And I would say it's between those two.
Yeah, I'm in for the second Golem if we like the juggling. I'm a little worried about both of our two drops not being able to block on the draw, but maybe we're just forfeiting on the draw. Isn't that what you're supposed to do in this format?
Excuse me. I thought blocking was illegal. So Golem has a pass.
Golem just makes you play correctly in the format.
Exactly.
You're right.
That's what
there
I
you go. You just can't mess it up.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got, after our Dane Ironfoot, we went down to Goblin Town and then back-to-back Golems. Pack one, pick five. What a gift. Mythic uncommon of the set. Maybe. Bothersome Noisemaker. One in a red 2/2.
Disrespectful to this card.
Every cast a non-creature spell, amass goblins one. It is disrespectful. The other thing that's very makes me nervous about this pack is there's no black cards.
I'm fine. We've got two golems and a down to Goblin Town.
You think you can float black. Locked and loaded?
Yeah. I feel at this point, I feel like I am forcing red black.
Okay. Yes, we have a Bothersome Noisemaker and nothing else in consideration. Pick five. Pick six.
You were worried? One of the best commons in the set still here.
Goblin Plate Mail's right here. The Rakdos hybrid equipment. And then again, like nothing else. That's why I feel like we can kind of speed run this pack. Pack one, pick seven. No cards that matter. I took a Goblin Town, red, black, land. Pack one, pick eight. Card quality is dropping. Like it's another pack where there's cards that don't matter. I took a Duskwatch Horror, the 2 Golgari, 3/1. Can't be blocked by tokens, and when it comes in, you put a ++1 counter on something.
Duskwatch Hunter, but yeah, that card's been good.
And then round out the pack with a handful, like a black-red card, and then a handful of green cards. Like, I get a pick 11 Adder Cop, and at this point, like, I do have Dane, I do have Noisemaker, but I am quite cognizant that aside from the pick 5 Noisemaker, we have not seen red cards, and so I am thinking about just, like, what else might I have to do in this draft?
I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking we got a pick five Noisemaker and I want to be black red.
All right. Well, pack two, pick one. I'm curious what you would take here. In the black red space, we've got a Dory, Bearer of Friends, 3 mana, 3/2 trample brings a treasure. Ravening Warg, the black 2-drop with Death Touch. In the uncommons, there's a Large Bear. The 3 Golgari, 5/5 reach, trample haste, another Snow Slope Hunter, and a rare is the Lonely Mountain. That's the red land that can make dwarves for 5 mana or costs cheaper for each equipment you have.
Yeah, I can't imagine many games come down to the Lonely Mountain to me. I think I would want to take the Large Bear here over the Lonely Mountain.
Okay, yeah. I think that's fine. I don't love taking Lonely Mountain here. I was kind of thinking about Lonely Mountain and honestly Snowslope Hunter as just like, what sort of grind insurance does my deck have? Because that is something I want to make sure my red black decks have. But I guess we've got the two golems. Those kind of have some grind insurance.
Don't need to grind if your bear mauls people in the face.
That's also true. That's also true. All right. So let's just say I took Large Bear. Let's see if that changes anything over the Lonely Mountain. Pack two, pick two. I don't really think there's any conversation. There's a Rage into the Valley, the two and a black. Draw a card, lose a life, amass two.
Amen. Yeah, card's great.
I mean, like, next best card is like Thranduil, Simic 2/3 that makes elves with landfall.
That card is not that good. Like, I think that card would be better if it didn't have the adventure somehow. Like, every time my opponent adventures on turn three, I just am fist pumping because I know their turn four play is going to be play Thranduil, or their turn five play is going to be Thranduil. And the tempo hit of two turns of essentially doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's just game over.
Yeah. Maybe it's patient. Maybe Patient Instructor is the next best card. I've just come up on that card so much.
Patient Instructor is the card I've come up the most on over the course of the format. Yeah. That and the 3/1 Eagle.
Yeah. Okay, so we took a Rage into the Valley. Pack two, pick three. Not much. Only black card is Golem, Silent Slinker. Only red card, or only mono red card, is Gundabad Opportunist, the 3 and a red 4/2 that, you know, exiles the top card of your library. Can play it until the end of your next turn. There's a Lakeshore Apothecary. We did just take a Rage into the Valley, but I don't think that's it. There's a Black Arrow. That's what I took. That's the 3-mana equipment. The reason I took this was twofold. I have Lonely Mountain. So cheap, that activation is cheaper with equipment. And I have Dane Ironfoot, which also cares about me having equipped creatures.
Black Arrow still seems too low impact for me. I would take Gundabad Opportunist here for the grind reasons you mentioned. I haven't hated an Opportunist in my 4-drop slot.
I agree. Yeah, I don't think that's terrible. What do you think about this? Pack 2, pick 4. There's a Duskwatch Hunter. There's a Smog, the Great Calamity. A card I've come down on quite a bit, I will say. I'm really not a fan of Smog anymore. And I feel like I thought this was on my Commons That Matter list.
Yeah, I would not put it there anymore. The format is too fast for Smog to be great.
Well, and it's too fast and then doesn't help in the grind aspect.
Right.
Of things. Because you're like picking off at a mass thing and then playing a 7-mana 5/5 that just gets sniped by whatever. Like,
well, and some of the grinding is like stopping on 6 lands and double spelling on 6 lands and filtering your extra lands away, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay, so Duskwatch Hunter, Smog, the Great Calamity, Magnificent End, the white deal 5, and there's an Old Fat Spider, 4GG, 6/7 reach, can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less, and if it's targeted by something your opponent controls, you draw a card.
Yeah, I see that you selected that. I still think, despite not liking Smog as much, I would still take Smog here and continue down the black-red train.
Yeah, it's probably right. There was part of me that, remember, I said there was like a late couple green cards, including Addercop. And Addercop is a card that we should talk about. I want to talk about it as notable card, so might as well talk about it now. This is the one in a green 2/1 Death Touch with landfall +1/+1. I just have come way up on this. I think if you end up having to play green, and yes, I still think green is the worst color in the set, but I think if you end up having to play green, that Addercop is a really serviceable 2-drop. I mean, similar to Ravening Warg in black.
It just demands to be answered and is going to get its man at some point. Correct. Over the course of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've liked that card a lot, and I have found Old Fat Spider to be strong. And I was just feeling like, I just still felt like red wasn't open. And my bothersome noisemaker is not great currently. Like, I don't have the
crude bent blades. Yeah.
I certainly don't have any red removal, but I don't have blades. I have got my one Rage into the Valley. Like, so I don't feel as pulled to red as I think I might if our noisemaker was more supported.
Here's where I'm at, I think, mentally. And I think that's a fine stance to take too. I've also identified, I think we just have the opposite impulse. Like, I've also identified that red is not the most open, but like, that makes me want to hold on for sure and not miss any potential playables, because I think the chance that I would want to audible is so low.
Gotcha. Pack two, pick five, we get a Stir Up Trouble, the single black removal spell. I think over nothing. Pick two, pick six, no black cards. Only red card is Dory, Bearer of Friends. And the best card by a country mile, as Ben might say, is Bilbo Luckwearer, the one on a blue looter. What?
Because I live in the Midwest.
Well, you say that. I've never
say that?
Yes.
I've said that? No.
You have said that many times. Oh my God. Give me the supercut. Give me the supercut of Ben saying country mile. A phrase I had never heard before meeting him. And now he's gaslighting me into saying that he's never said it. Anyway, there's a Bilbo Luckwearer in the pack, which I did take. Again, my sort of like, I would like to figure out what this open second color is, but maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm dancing too much.
I mean, I would take Dory here. Like, I just wonder what the sequence of events that has to happen is that would get you to play blue, because we've already discussed the tension between blue and black. Like, what black decks want to do and what blue decks want to do are two different things. And Bilbo's mm-hmm. a great card in a heavy blue deck. It is not a great card in a heavy black deck, which we are currently.
Correct. I agree with that. I think one of the things I have felt, or maybe this is what I was searching for with this pick of Bilbo, when I see a pick six Bilbo, it often means that blue is wide open. And like, that's sort of what I was looking for. Most of my drafts have had clear, this is what's open for you. And this felt like the one of the more scrappy air quotes of like, what am I supposed to do? And it seems like you're more comfortable being like, yeah, I'm just going to hang on to these good red cards because black red rules. And I felt much more like I'm looking for the, this is clearly what you should be doing.
Yeah. But I think we're far enough along here that even if you find that, it's a little late to like totally pivot into blue, which is such a heavy strategy.
Yeah, that's fair. Pack rounds out with some more speculation, a Magnificent End, pick seven out of a pack with no black cards and only one red card that is bad. A pick eight, Bilbo Baggins Burglar, the common Bilbo. And then some more green on the wheel, another Addercup and a Wood Elves. So not really sure what's happening. And then, but all of my brilliant green speculation comes to bear here with the bear himself, pack three, pick one, Bjorn the Fierce.
3GG, 6/6 Mythic Trample. Other bears you control get +2/+2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a trample counter on up to one target creature you control. It becomes a bear in addition to its other types. Then if you control three or more bears, draw two cards. What? A Magic the Gathering card.
Card is broken.
It's very strong.
Yeah. So I took that and then I was like, okay, I am going to be black green. And I think I ended up splashing Dane because it was fairly free to do so. But yeah, black green had three Addercups, got a Quarrel as another piece of interaction, juggled some golems, and took this to the reverse sweep. I was very scared. This started 0-2.
Ooh.
0-2 into 7-2.
So just as food for thought, like,
yes,
certainly you play Bjorn and it works out well for you. Mm-hmm. Another note is that like pack two was dry, right? Mm-hmm. But pack one through six picks, we had six premium black red cards, right? You have like six basically first pickable cards in Double Golem, Noisemaker, Plate Mail, Iron Foot, Down to Goblin Town.
Mm-hmm.
And pack two is thin,
mm-hmm.
but that would be expected in the best archetype. Like if somebody next to you is trying to draft it, maybe mistakenly, and doesn't read the signals that you're drafting it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you also could have been solidly black-red and had a good black-red deck in pack three. Now, like, are you happy that you get to take Bjorn? For sure. But I think like some of the stuff we were talking about, like was specking on Bilbo, and some of those specs were free. Like there just literally were no black red cards. But
yeah.
I think in general, when I'm that deep into the best archetype through the first six picks of pack one, it felt like you were searching for ways maybe to not be that because you saw that it wasn't open when
mm-hmm.
I think you can also have the mentality of not that one's right or wrong, but you can also have the mentality of, yes, I've read that this isn't the most open, but how can I still be this because my start was so strong? But I think you got paid off handsomely with the green cards that you got late and then the Bjorn yeah. open.
I mean, that's the thing is that if I don't open Bjorn,
you're still fine.
I still just, I end up in black red and maybe I have like a few less Dories than you, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
I missed out on mostly just filler.
Amen. Yes.
So it didn't cost me much, I think, to to end up where I was, and I got paid off. And if you don't get paid off, you still end up in the best deck. Okay. I jammed 14 Arena Directs this week. I was actually,
So many.
Well, I got lucky that I won a box on my second run. And so then the gambler in me was like, well, it's all free. Like, just let's keep it rolling. So I won 3 boxes in 14 runs. Who knows what they will resale for? I'm sure the price will plummet once everybody gets, there's this influx of boxes. So maybe I'll sit on them for a little bit. But you know, I think I can expect to get about 700 for them each. Which,
how many did you win?
3.
3. Let's go.
3 and 14 runs. So, you know, whatever. It's a handsome profit. I'm not mad about it. And I would like to talk Arena Direct in general, because I had a conversation with you. I've seldom engaged with these. But I had a conversation with you. I think it was during, gosh, I forget which format. Maybe it was Lauren Eclipsed. But I just feel like you sort of shifted my brain a little bit to how to think about building those decks. And really think I took that to bear. And I think Hobbit was also a very, very unique way to engage with Sealed that I want to talk about. But so my drafting, I did draft a bunch because I was there when they ran out of product. I don't know if you know this, but they had planned to have the direct for like the whole week.
Uh-huh.
But they did say that because this happened last time, like they ran out of product and there was this messiness of like they were just going to give people like
the MSRP
value. And that was low and blah, blah, blah. So they just said, we're going to stop when we run out of product. And I was there. I had like O2'd with a pool. I was streaming to Discord. I O2'd with a pool, went to click to rejoin. And it was like, no, you can't. We're done. The event's over.
Wow.
So
yeah, I think for me, did not join this one. And I think rightly so, because I would have only been able to enter a couple times, and trying to spike a couple times just feels like throwing bad money after good or something. And I also was not going to be in my best head playing space. Like, it was much more fun for me to relax and play drafts for low stakes in the evening when I had time to play Magic.
Yeah. So just a few cards I want to talk about, and then I want to talk from Hobbit specifically, and then I want to talk about Arena Direct strategy kind of in general. Okay. Celebrate the Mountain King. I'm here for this is a 3-white enchantment. When it enters, exile a non-land permanent that player controls, and then when this enchantment enters, you recruit. I think this card is nuts. I think I have like been splashing this in draft. I certainly splashed this in sealed a lot, and it's just an absolute house in blue white. This card is nuts.
Card's incredible.
I have a question for you. Is there anything better than playing around Settle the Wreckage in best of one for multiple turns and then being shown that you were right? Is there any better feeling in the world?
You love a good play around some cards.
I really do. Nothing. It's just like, I think we all can agree that we play this game. We're obsessed with this game because we like to feel smart.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think anything makes me feel smart more than being like, I know you have this. Like, I had this game where my opponent, they didn't do anything one turn. The next turn they cast Magnificent End because I was only attacking with like one thing. And they're like, oh, Magnificent End. I killed. Oh, that was the one thing I had. I'm like, no, I see you. You're not going to trick me. And I finally was like, here's 2 things. And they were like, all right, settle the wreckage. I was like, I knew it. Like, I have not gotten got by Settle the Wreckage this format.
I also have not gotten got by Settle the Wreckage. It's been cast against me attacking with one creature. Yeah.
Is Settle washed? Is that my take?
I don't think Settled is that good. I would take Crude Bentblade over Settle the Wreckage, pack one, pick one, easy.
That's not fair. How about
Goblin Plate Armor? Goblin Plate Mail?
Mail.
Plate Mail? They can't wear mail. I'm sorry.
Order in the swear jar.
They can't wear mail. It's too big. Goblins can't equip plate mail.
There was a lot of conversation, and this was around Arena Directs specifically, but a lot of conversation about Ragged Short Spear in the Discord this week. This is the 1 in a red equipment. When it enters, you may discard a card. If you do, draw 2 cards. Equipped creature gets +2/+0, and has an equip cost of 3. People kept telling me, it was like, it's actually like doing pretty well. Like, if you sort by Arena Direct best of one stats on 17 lands, like it has like a C+ rating. And I was sort of like, okay, but that, like, there could be a thing where all of Red's cards have like a C+ rating or higher because Red is busted or whatever. So I dug into it, and it was ahead of some cards that I was surprised by. And I think I finally came around to it in the appreciate, respect the grindy aspect of this format. And it was hard for me to hold both wolves inside of me. But there is really a, this format is fast, and then it also can grind to a halt. And then you need, like, every little bit of flood insurance card filtering you can have is valuable. And I think Short Spear is a card I've come around to this week.
I have not cast one and have not seen one cast. And I also clicked on this for the first time when you had it here, and I don't think I'd ever read the Thrill of Possibility text at the top of the card.
You just thought it was the worst equipment ever, ever made.
I had graded it, thought this card I'm never putting in my deck, and I don't think I ever read it again. But per that discussion, I want to skip down to one of mine, which is Reverent Howl.
Yeah.
It says 2 and a black for an instant. Choose one. Target player draws 2 cards and loses 2 life. Or target creature gets +2/+2 and gains lifelink until end of turn. If we're talking about the format being 2 wolves of aggressive and grindy, this card meets
it does
both of those very well. And I have been liking playing it, and it has also gotten me quite good this week.
Well, it's also the very sneaky part of this card is that it's sign in blood. So you can kill your opponent if they're at 2 life, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and I think both Reverent Howl and Ragged Short Spear would be in the category of card for me that is like, hope not to play. Like, if my deck is good enough, I'm not looking. Like, Short Spear and Reverent Howl do not make the cut in my best red black decks.
I don't know. I think Reverent Howl as a one of is pretty juicy.
Wow.
Like, to lure your opponent into a race, like the lifelink swing, if you land a lifelink swing, that's game winning. And then, like, the fact that it has the buyout clause of if you're mm-hmm. grinding, I think I actively like a copy of Reverent Howl in my red-black decks after this week.
Okay, all right, different take. But yeah, but these are the kinds of cards where, like, if you're in a contested lane, or certainly if you're looking at a sealed pool, they go way up in value. Mirkwood Nurturer, this is the 2 and Simic Hybrid 3/2. When it enters, it picks something up, and if you do, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. There's a lot of good stuff to pick up with this card. Like, it just keeps going up and up. And again, the hybrid nature of it meant I was playing a lot of it in sealed, but picking up the discard goblins, obviously picking up Crude Bent Blade, picking up Plate Mail to then redeploy that, picking up Sagas. There's just a lot of good stuff to grab.
Yeah. Old Thrush is another one. The 2 mana 1/2 flying. Whenever this enters, you gain 2 life. You search your library for basic land, put it on top, and then shuffle.
Yeah, I just became a big fan of this card during the Arena Directs because of what we're like. It plays the Crude Bent Blade game really well. It is both good for you to sack to their Crude Bent Blade. It also wears a Crude Bent Blade very well as a 3/2 flyer. The 2 life that it gives you is not for nothing. Hitting land drops is goated in this format, and you're splashing in sealed. So do I play it less in draft? Yes, but I have started to have eyes for it in draft as well.
Long-bodied Gray Dog, 3 mana 2/2 flash reach. When this enters, create a tapped treasure token. This I clearly was not in the Arena Direct loop because this has been the talk of the town nowhere that I've seen. I must not be exploring the deep holes that you are.
This was doing some stuff in the Arena Directs, and again,
like I blocking and trading for 3 mana. Like, what is it doing?
Yeah, so like ambushing stuff to set up Crude Bent Blades.
Okay.
Accelerate, like, it gives you 2 rectangles. Like, in this, think of it like it's like Dory. It's a colorless Dory.
A colorless Dory.
But it has reach, and so it can kill their crane, or like it eats
eat an old thrush.
Eat an old thrush. Like, it has a keyword bad, so you don't mind sacking it to a Crude Bent Blade. Like,
does it? Is this like, well, I really want to play red black and long bodied gray dog gets me to playables type deal, or like you're actively looking to include it?
I think somewhere in the middle. Like, I think you're ideally hoping to play it where it like supports a plan, whether that's I think the treasure of it all is really important because you do like being able to splash some stuff. Like, if you have a Celebrate the Mountain King or whatever, like having that free way to splash. But black and red also use 2 pieces of cardboard really effectively in some versions.
Okay.
I was out and now I'm in on Thror's Map. The 2 mana artifact searches up a land and can loot for all the reasons about Thrush. Like, I mean, it doesn't engage with Crude Bent Blade in that way, but hitting land drops is great. And the grind insurance is really great, I think.
But that's a sealed card, right? You're not happy about Thrower's Map and Draft, are you?
I think I am. I think I am.
Interesting. That's hard for me to
wrap. I'm not happy to play it on turn two. It's not a two drop.
Right. Last one on the list is Dwarven Matic. This is two mana for the equipment. Auto equips to a dwarf when it enters, and it gives equipped creature +2/+2 and ward one, and then has an equip cost of three. I think, to me, we were talking about last week about red-white dwarves. How do you end up there? Like, some late Dwarven Matics is a great reason to end up red-white dwarves. Like, if you're starting black-red, black gets closed, you're heavier red, some white's flowing, you see a pick seven Dwarven Matic, you wheel another Dwarven Matic. Like, this card hits hard, especially in tandem. I got good by... That's great English. But there's the red-white one that gives your things ward one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this also gives ward one. And in my head, I was like, oh, this thing has ward one, but it had double ward one. So yeah, I've been impressed by some Dwarven Matics.
I don't know if it's Biffer or Boffer, the six mana hybrid Boros card that like doubles your dwarf triggers. Mm-hmm. I got it doubles the ward trigger.
Oh no. Wow.
Yeah, just an important safety tip out there. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to make a game time decision here. We will save Arena Direct and Sealed Chats for next week because I want to talk about Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And I want to make sure we have enough time to do so because Lord of the Rings is coming back. This is one of your goats. I have very fond memories of this set as well. But I will also say, and maybe this was just because of like Jonah was like 6 months at the time that the set came out. But I have not looked at this set in 3 years, and I was surprised at how many cards I didn't remember. I certainly had fond memories of a lot, but looking through the whole card file, I was like, I don't remember a lot of these cards.
That's because all you did was Forest Green White Legends. That's why.
It was so fun. Maybe that was it. Once I got to the gold cards, I was like, oh, I remember these.
Okay, so if we're going back to Lord of the Rings, you can take your Hobbit color power rankings along with you because, baby, they are there and back again.
Yeah. Now, maybe not as egregiously. Like, black is certainly the best by a lot, but is it by as much as it is in The Hobbit?
I don't think so. I think blue is very close as well.
Yes. So we have black one, blue two, red three, white four, and green in fifth. Yes, really, truly, green is the worst color in the set.
In Lord of the Rings and in The Hobbit.
Yes, I know. I know what I believe to be true. Okay. You can tell me that green black is good as much as you want, and all I hear you saying is these black cards are good.
Yeah. The black being the best by a lot, I think it's more forceable in The Hobbit or easier to end up in black. Like it was, you could get cut out of black in Lord of the Rings.
It took me a while to remember. This is pre-play boosters. So we're back to more commons. Then uncommons, and the distribution is different, and I think that just makes the texture of packs just feel like they used to feel, and not feel like they have since the play booster era.
Feel good. It's okay to say. You can say.
I'm not there. but that I think is why they're less forcible. Like not a small set, and not play booster era.
Yeah, so also what Lord of the Rings had going for it was Ring Tempting, which was a new mechanic that looked kind of like, I don't know about this when you read it, and it was very hard to evaluate, but turned out it was, one, an excellent mechanic, and two, a very interesting puzzle in draft, because like if you had three instances of Ring Tempting in your deck, it wasn't very powerful, but all of a sudden if you got to six, it was pretty powerful, because then you could get to the second level pretty quickly. And then if you had like 12 and you could turbo to the fourth level, it was near unstoppable. But so to show you what the levels are, level one is your Ring Bearer's legendary and can't be blocked by greater power. So basically when something says the ring tempts you, you get to turn something into the Ring Bearer. So the legendary creature can't be blocked by creatures with greater power. The second level is your Ring Bearer attacks and loots on attack, which is extremely good filtering for the format. And much like Hobbit, like it was grindy and you could actually run out of cards. So filtering and looting mattered in Lord of the Rings quite a bit. The third chapter was, I think, the least impactful, which was when your creature becomes blocked, the blocker's sacrificed at the end of combat. And then the fourth chapter is whenever your ring bearer deals combat damage to a player, each opponent loses 3 life, which ended the game very quickly.
Yeah, because, you know, you're ostensibly putting it on something small so that that sneak, the first part of it, right, can't be blocked by greater power. So if you have it on a 1-1, that's ideal.
But making your ring bearer a 1-3 is excellent because then it can never be killed. And then the skull, mm-hmm. like the sacrifice chapter becomes relevant. And also, once you hit the fourth chapter, if you're doing that, presumably your deck has extra ways to ring tempt. And then it just basically you can always make every creature on your side of the battlefield a must kill threat.
Yeah. And so what you're talking about, like this is for folks who maybe weren't playing then, but were playing when we talked about Aether Drift. And you and I were such huge fans of the start your engines mechanic. And we also, you were immediately like, oh, this is just ring tempting is back. And they played out very similar in the sense of the more instances of them you have, the better they all become.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. It takes us into some archetype power rankings. Top of the heap, best color black, best archetype, no black in the house. Best archetype was blue-red spells, but I think by quite a wide margin. And blue-red could be two different decks. Like it could be blue-red spells, which could have an extremely low creature count or a zero creature count, depending on how you chose to build the deck, because there were a lot of spells that made creatures, that sort of thing. And there were also some great uncommon payoffs for a blue-red spells decks. But also you could be blue-red ring tempting was a great deck to draft.
Yeah, I was trying to look through like my old, you know, I went to 17 lands, looking at my draft logs or whatever, and I found some wild blue-red deck. I was like, oh, I have trophy with this blue-red deck. I wonder what it's going to look like. This was just turbo ring tempting blue red. It was not spells. There was like a red one drop that I think when it dies, you ring tempt. Mm-hmm. I had 4 copies of that and just like tons of ways to just turbo ring tempt and have small creatures. And it was looked pretty sweet. Got me excited for this. So the second best archetype, and this is sort of us like meta adjusting, I guess. We said red black as uncontested as the second best archetype. And I anticipate red black to be extremely contested during the flashback. Now, there's a lot of like, who knows who's drafting flashback sets? And like at the beginning of the 2-week stint, it's going to be a lot of new players. At the end of the 2-week stint, it's going to be all the sicko seasoned players. But I think coming off of The Hobbit and people knowing that red black is a good archetype in this set, red black is going to be contested in a lot of
drafts. You know what's not going to be contested?
Green, white
legends, baby.
Which has not shown up on our power rankings just yet.
In third place, blue black amass control.
Yeah, and so amass is in this format as well. It was first in War of the Spark and then in Lord of the Rings. Red black sort of build as a mass aggro and blue black build as a mass control, but that's what black is bringing to the party. Blue white in fourth place. This was a draw two humans deck, but mostly just like a standard Cabs theory, cards that affect the board, curve out, beat down deck.
It was blue white bath song, baby. That's what it was.
That's a Ben Werney thing. We'll talk about bath song in a little bit.
Like those four decks up top. And green white food were the format.
Well, green white legends.
Green white legends. It was ostensibly food, but it was green white legends. The rest of these were significantly worse than those other archetypes.
And that is quick hits, black white tokens, red white go wide humans, green black sacrifice, red green power matters, and blue green scry.
And blue green was like really atrocious in this format.
Yeah, it could be a home. Blue green could have been
a legends home as well.
Another home for legends like blue green splash, also fine. But yeah,
another main hit of Lord of the Rings: 1-mana land cyclers, Lorien revealed in this format, generous end
at common. These were commons.
Common
Troll of Khazad-dûm. Yeah, so if you've played Vintage Cube or Powered Cube on Arena, you've seen these cards. You've played with them. You get to just play with them in limited, and how they like. The mana cyclers and many partings is a green common. That's the single green, search up a land, put it into your hand, and then make a food. You could cheat on lands in this format. Like, most decks were not running 17 lands.
Right? No, I think somewhere in the 15 to 16 land range with 2 to 3 of the 1-mana land cyclers was the most common.
So we've alluded to this green-white legends deck, this Great Hall of the Citadel deck. it's, I'm trying to temper it because I'm sensitive to people's gems and gold in their account. I don't want to be responsible for things. But this deck, like, it is good.
It's at the intersection of fun and good in a way that not a lot of other archetypes, and open, that in a way that not a lot of other archetypes are.
And a lot has to go right, but a lot of times those things can go right because this color pair is not that good. Like, and so you should get Great Hall of the Citadel because no one else should want that land, and you should get Many Partings, and then you just get to snap up all the legends that no one else wants and go to town. Now, the one thing you really do need for the deck, or really desire, and the reason why it still is in the green-white zone, is Frodo Baggins is an uncommon in the set. This is green-white for a 1/3. Whenever Frodo or another legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, the ring tempts you, and as long as Frodo is your ring bearer, it must be blocked if able. And ring tempting was really important in this archetype because this was how you got velocity. This was how you churned through your deck.
Well, and it was important not just for this archetype, but also unique to this archetype because of Frodo. Like, ring tempting was primarily a Grixis mechanic. That was why the Grixis colors were so good compared to green and white, because green and white didn't really get to ring tempt. And Frodo Baggins in the green white legends deck did let you hang with those Grixis decks in terms of ring tempting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's definitely a big piece of it. There's also super sick rares that incentivize you to do this green white legends thing that are legitimately powerful build arounds.
Absolutely.
So yeah, very fun deck. And I think some of my fondest memories from the format, in addition to bath songing, are that summer that I was at your house and we were just jamming green white legends over and over and over again.
I also have fond memories of that. Yeah, very, very good.
So I think one of the, if you're coming back to Lord of the Rings from current Magic, one of the things that was most unique about Lord of the Rings was it felt old school in the sense that, like, this was coming off the heels of many formats. And I think many formats in the play booster era are like this as well, which is like draw a card just gets stapled onto things willy nilly. And it was very difficult to ever run out of things to do in formats that were leading up to Lord of the Rings. And it was actually possible to run out of gas in Lord of the Rings, which was a very cool feature of the format to me. And once that's possible, that means control gets way better, which was why I was obsessed with a saga called The Bath Song. It's 3 and a blue. Chapters 1 and 2, you draw 2 cards, discard a card. And then the third chapter, you can shuffle any number of cards from your graveyard into your library. And then I always forgot that you just get 2 blue mana afterwards as well, which is super sick. And so basically one Bath Song was probably enough to one time get whatever you wanted out of your graveyard, shuffle it back in your deck to win the long game. But if you had 2 of them, you could chain them together and basically play a clear the mind strategy like you did in Ravnica Allegiance, which was you just wanted to jam all kinds of instance sorceries, things that put themselves in the graveyard, removal spells that exiled your opponent's stuff. There was a card called Lembas, which was an artifact that like cantrip that you could sacrifice to gain 3 life. And that shuffled itself back into your library. And so you could buffer your life total as well once you thinned your deck out, if you were maybe like worried that your opponent was going to try to mize you out. You just basically had all of the tools to play a true control deck that was planning to play the long game, see all of its cards, and win via looping its deck. And oftentimes you wouldn't even have to deck the opponent. You would just grind their spirit to a halt, and eventually they would just concede. And there is not much better feeling in Magic for me. I think that's my favorite feeling in Magic. You were talking about reading your opponent for Settle the Wreckage or whatever. I think when my opponent is just like, all right, you got it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of my favorite feelings in Magic.
Yeah,
you just break their spirit while they're still at 20 life. So that was my Bath Song control rundown. But please don't draft them. Please leave them for me.
Yeah, yeah. Come on. Let's just be kind. Let's talk about some cards that matter, commons that matter. What are some top cards that people should be looking out for in their
in drafts? Black, it's Dunland Crabbane, which is 2 and a black for a 1/1 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, amass orcs 2.
Yeah, this card, I mean, a long comes in a long line of 3 mana, some combination of 2/2 and a 1/1. One of these has flying cards, and it was just excellent. And also, like, 2 small things that you're happy to be ring bearers.
Yes, for sure.
In blue, we've got the card. Just so clean, so sexy. Birthday Escape, a single blue. Draw a card, the ring tempts you.
Card is powerful. Yeah. It's very good. You can, and you would play as many copies of this card as you could get, because it was great to just get you through the ring temptings. Even like, you would just fire it off on turn one quite happily, because mm-hmm. it gets you to level two quicker or level four quicker. Mm-hmm. But then late in the game, you draw it, and it, if you're, they've killed your ring bearer, it also just lets you create another ring bearer. It was so good. Did double duty between towing the line between blue spells decks and the blue ring temps decks. It was premium card.
Yes, absolutely.
In red, Rally at the Hornburg. This is one in a red for a spell that makes a 1/1 creature and a 1/1 with haste. It gives you two bodies, one of which has haste. Have haste?
Yeah.
No way.
It's better. One in a red, sorcery. Create 2/1/1 white human soldier creature tokens. Humans you control gain haste until end of turn. So you could do some nasty things with it plus something else on like turn six or whatever.
This is a great card. Great card. And again, beautifully towed the line between blue-red spells decks and blue-red ring temps decks, because it gave you 2/1/1s to make your ring bearers as well.
It gives you things to ring tempt and gives you good blockers for their ring bearers, right? You get the 1/1s to trade with their 1/1s.
Yep.
Next up we have
Errand, Rider of Gondor. This is 2 and a white for a 3/2 human soldier. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card. Then if you don't control a legendary creature, put a card from your hand on the bottom of your library. So worst case scenario, you're getting looting. And best case scenario, if you're in the green-white legends or you're doing white legend stuff. And just white also had a heavy legends theme as well.
But like, just listen to how good those first three cards were. And then here we're like a 3-mana 3/2 that might draw you a card.
Yeah, the first three cards are hyper efficient.
Yeah.
I mean, Grixis was where it was at in this format, for sure.
For sure. And then green...
it's like question marks, which is never a great look for a color about what its best card is.
No Kappa. Like, yeah, green, it's either Generacent, which is the Land Cycler. That's the 6-mana 4/6 reach. Makes it
5/7, right? Isn't it a 5/7?
5/7. 5/7 with reach that makes a food. Or Woe's Pathfinder might be it, just as a nod to the green white legends of it all. That's the 1 and a green, 1/1, taps out a mana of any color. 6 and a green, tap another target creature, gets +3/+3 and gains trample until end of turn. The activation on this came up as far as I remember, and it's interesting to note that many partings was not our top common in green, and I think we definitely thought it would be, but Great Hall of the Citadel just kind of does it better in that respect. And when you have like three Great Halls of the Citadels and a bunch of many partings, it's awkward because like your many partings decks want like 10
heavy
forests.
Heavy green, yeah.
10 forests, but only like 15 lands. And that's tough to do when you have two or three Great Halls. So Woe's Pathfinder was just a nicer way to fix. And it ramped.
Want to shout out the Golden Egg Award winner from this format, which did so much. This is Pelargir Survivor. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/3. You can tap to add 1 mana of any color. Spend this mana only to cast an instant or sorcery spell, which blue definitely wanted to do. You could play this in every blue deck but blue-green, probably, quite happily. And then it also had the activated ability of 5 and a blue tap. Target player mills 3 cards, which also came up as a relevant win condition. Some of these matches were very grindy, and then your Pelargir Survivor that ramped you and then would have become irrelevant in the late game, all of a sudden your opponent did probably inevitably have to spend some sort of a removal spell on this card.
It just kind of feels bad that like the better mana dork is in blue. Like that just gives you an idea. Like Pelargir Survivor is miles better.
Better than Woe's Pathfinder.
Than Woe's Pathfinder.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I'm just looking at another top common we haven't shouted out is the Torment of Gollum. This is 3 and a black for a sorcery. You thought seize your opponent. It's very similar to, gosh, what was that card from Secrets of Strixhaven? It was another thing. It was a 4 mana, put 2/+1/+1 counters and thought seize them. This does the same thing. It thought seizes them for 4 and you amass orcs too. You can go Pelargir Survivor on 2 into Torment of Gollum on 3.
Yeah, Torment of Gollum, very strong.
We threw out an Imperial Oath clunky overperformer award winner, a card I have no memory of. This is...
Oh, you just didn't Bath Song enough then, baby. This was
there key. It is. That's
this was
what
key
it is.
To the blue-white Bath Song.
I was like, this
decks.
Wasn't good in green-white legends.
No, it was not. But it was great in blue-white Bassong decks. This is Banish from Edoras. This is 4 and a white for a sorcery. Spell costs 2 less to cast if it targets a tapped creature and you exile target creature. This is exactly the kind of card you want in blue-white Bassong because it puts itself in the graveyard for you to shuffle back in with Bassong. It exiles their creature permanently, so there's no shenanigans. Their creatures are going to be tapped because they're attacking you, so it costs 3 often, like you're playing defense. This was premium in blue-white Bassong.
So those are the 3 decks that I'll be keeping my eye out for. Is black amass decks, either red, black, or blue, black. Blue control decks, and green, white legends.
Honestly,
I guess ring tempting.
Ring tempting, so good. Yeah, I think if you want to try to game the format, I think level 1 to the format is play black. And play black amass decks, whether that is black-red probably being the first, black-blue, heavy black being the second. That's level 1. Okay. I think if you want to come extra, like if you're experienced or you want to try to get a different experience, I think the actual best thing to do if black is remotely contested is blue-red ring tempt or blue-red spells. I think the biggest edge you're likely to have coming back to the format against people who are inexperienced or maybe you're misremembering or maybe who haven't studied up or take a while to get their sea legs under them is that ring tempting is busted. Like the more...
Yes, you want as many instances of ring tempting as you can get.
Assuming you hit a critical mass, right? Like there are a lot of tricks that say the ring tempts you. If you're playing those as your 4th instance of ring tempting, they are not very good. But if you're playing those tricks that say the ring tempts you as your 12th instance of ring tempting, they're extremely good. So that's a way, like, knowing that about the ring tempting and how to leverage that, I think is a way you can get a big edge in the format, because black red is not that much about ring tempting. It was more of a blue red kind of thing. What?
I'm just looking at like old decks while you're talking, old Lord of the Rings decks. Remember this card, Fiery Inscription?
Yeah, that was the build around red enchantment. Whenever the ring...
Red enchantment, when it enters, the ring tempts you. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it deals 2 damage to each opponent. Man, this format was sweet.
It was sweet. But that was a hard build around, right? Because taking turn 3 off was definitely a cost for that card. But you could build your whole deck around that. And Gandalf's Sanction was another sweet one. The one blue-red where it dealt X damage to a creature, equal the number of instants and sorceries cards in your graveyard, but excess damage is dealt to the dome. Yeah. And then there was this weird leveling game where like you knew your opponent had Gandalf Sanction, so you tried to not have a creature on the battlefield that they could kill. Or you tried to
have removal up.
Removal in response.
Your own creature in response. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a sick part of the format.
Man. Yeah, this format's really sweet. This is cool. I'm excited for it.
So ring tempts you. Big edge you can gain. I think playing blue control decks is harder than playing the black decks, but I think if you can build good blue control decks, and it certainly doesn't have to have the Bassong in it. That's my own personal obsession of like trying to do the loop-de-doop stuff, but just building blue, I want to be able to play into the late game decks and not run out of cards. And Lorien Revealed also does a great job of that as well. Like if you don't get the Bassongs, having a couple Lorien Revealeds that's the land cycler, the island cycler for 1 mana. That's 3 blue, blue, draw 3 cards. That's a great way to fill up the tank after your tank is empty with blue decks. That's where I would go if black is contested, is blue, red ring tempting, blue, red spells, but certainly viewing it as a Grixis format. And then if you want to have fun and if you want to try to be competitive while having fun, I think green, white legends, you can certainly force it. It's way better if you let it come to you.
Yeah.
But when it comes to you, it's more like a 1 in every 8 drafts kind of thing. But I would expect that deck to be very open in the flashback.
At least initial, like until people start to see it, I would expect it's going to be open.
But truly, like I sent you all my trophies. I didn't play black hardly ever in this format because I identified that it was the best and was overdrafted, but that there was stuff that could compete with it. Mm-hmm. Quite handily that wasn't overdrafted.
Yeah.
So my trophy decks are all blue decks and legends decks because that was where I was that was where I was happy in the format, and that is where I assume I will be happy when the flashback drafts come back.
Let's go. Get it. Excited to be talking about this in the Discord this week. I feel like it's going to be a good mix of like people who have fond memories like us and people being like, "Help, I'm new."
Yeah, nostalgia and newbies. Yeah, for sure.
Excited to usher in a new era.
All right. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsunlimited.com. There is links to our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon page, all that Lords of Limited stuff on our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.